to come. Subtracting fat, the slow carb diet 1. It is possible to lose 20 pounds of body fat in 30 days by optimizing any of three factors: exercise, diet, or a drug supplement regimen. 20 pounds for most people means moving down at least two clothing sizes, whether that's going from a size 14 dress to a size 10, or from an XXL shirt to a large. The waist and hips show an even more dramatic reduction in circumference. By April 6, 2007, as an example, I had cut from nearly 180 pounds to 165 pounds in 6 weeks, while adding about 10 pounds of muscle, which means I lost approximately 25 pounds of fat. The changes aren't subtle. The diet that I'll introduce in this chapter, the slow-carb diet, is the only diet besides the rather extreme cyclical ketogenic diet, CKD, that has produced veins across my abdomen, which is the last place I lose fat. There are just 5 simple rules to follow. Rule number 1. Avoid white carbohydrates. Avoid any carbohydrate that is or can be white. The following foods are prohibited, except for within 60 minutes of finishing a resistance training workout like those described in the Occam's Protocol chapters. All bread, rice, including brown, cereal, potatoes, pasta, tortillas, and fried food with breading. If you avoid eating the aforementioned foods and anything else white, you'll be safe. Just for fun, another reason to avoid the whiteies: chlorine dioxide, one of the chemicals used to bleach flour, even if later made brown again, a common trick, combines with residual protein in most of these foods to form alloxin. Researchers use alloxin in lab rats to induce diabetes. That's right, it's used to produce diabetes. This is bad news for you if you're eating anything white or enriched. Don't eat white stuff unless you want to get fatter. Rule number 2. Eat the same few meals over and over again. The most successful dieters, regardless of whether their goal is muscle gain or fat loss, eat the same few meals over and over again. There are 47,000 products in the average U.S. grocery store, but only a handful of them won't make you fat. Mix and match from the following list, constructing each meal with one pick from each of the three groups. Here are the choices that produce the fastest fat loss for me. Proteins that include egg whites with 1 to 2 whole eggs for flavor, or, if organic, 2 to 5 whole eggs including yolks. Chicken breast or thigh. Beef, preferably grass-fed. Fish. Pork. Legumes that include lentils, also called dal or dal. Black beans. Pinto beans, red beans, soybeans. And finally, vegetables that include spinach, mixed vegetables, including broccoli, cauliflower, or any other cruciferous vegetables, sauerkraut, kimchi, asparagus, peas, broccoli, green beans. Eat as much as you like of these food items, but remember, keep it simple. Pick 3 or 4 meals and repeat them. Almost all restaurants can give you a salad or vegetables in place of French fries, potatoes, or rice. Surprisingly, I have found Mexican food, after swapping out rice for vegetables, to be one of the cuisines most conducive to the slow-carb diet. If you have to pay an extra $1 to $3 to substitute at a restaurant, consider it your six-pack tax, the nominal fee you will pay for becoming leaner. Most people who go on low-carbohydrate diets complain of low energy and quit. Not because such diets can't work, but because they consume insufficient calories. A half cup of rice is 300 calories, whereas a half cup of spinach is 15 calories. Vegetables are not calorically dense, so it is critical that you add legumes for caloric load. Eating more frequently than 4 times per day might be helpful on higher carb diets to prevent gorging, but it's not necessary with the ingredients we're using. Eating more frequent meals also appears to have no enhancing effect on resting metabolic rate, despite claims to the contrary. Frequent meals can be used in some circumstances, but not for this reason. The following meal schedule is based on a late sleep schedule, as I'm a night owl who gives up the ghost at 2 a.m. at the earliest, usually with wine glass or book still in hand, a la heroin addict. It's a good look if you can pull it off. Adjust your meals to fit your schedule, but make sure to have your first meal within an hour of waking. Meals are approximately 4 hours apart. 10 a.m., breakfast. 2 p.m., lunch. 6:30 p.m., smaller second lunch. 8 to 9 p.m., recreation or sports training. 10 p.m., dinner. 12 a.m., glass of red wine and Discovery Channel before bed. Here are some of my meals that recur again and again. Breakfast, home. Scrambled Eggology pourable egg whites with one whole egg, black beans, and mixed vegetables warmed up or cooked in a microwave using Pyrex containers. Lunch, Mexican restaurant. Grass-fed organic beef, pinto beans, mixed vegetables, and extra guacamole. Dinner, home. Grass-fed organic beef from Trader Joe's, lentils, and mixed vegetables. Just remember, this diet is, first and foremost, intended to be effective, not fun. It can be fun with a few tweaks, but that's not the goal. Rule number 3, don't drink calories. Drink massive quantities of water and as much unsweetened tea, coffee, with no more than 2 tablespoons of cream, I suggest using cinnamon instead, or other no-calorie, low-calorie beverages as you'd like. Do not drink milk, including soy milk, normal soft drinks, or fruit juice. Limit diet soft drinks to no more than 16 ounces per day if you can, as the aspartame can both stimulate weight gain and cause vicious headaches. I'm a wine fanatic, and I have 1 to 2 glasses of red wine almost every evening. It doesn't appear to have any negative impact on my rate of fat loss. Red wine is by no means required for this diet to work, but it's 100% allowed, unlike white wines and beer, both which should be avoided. Up to 2 glasses of red wine per night, no more. Rule number 4, don't eat fruit. Humans don't need fruit 6 days a week, and they certainly don't need it year-round. If your ancestors were from Europe, for example, how much fruit did they eat in the winter 500 years ago? Think they had Florida oranges in December? Not a chance, but you're still here, so the lineage somehow survived. The only exceptions to the no-fruit rule are tomatoes and avocados, and the latter should be eaten in moderation, no more than 1 cup or 1 meal per day. Otherwise, just say no to fruit and its principal sugar, fructose, which is converted to glycerol phosphate more efficiently than almost all other carbohydrates. Glycerol phosphate forms triglycerides via the liver, which forms fat storage. There are a few biochemical exceptions to this, but avoiding fruit 6 days per week is the most reliable policy. But what's this 6 days a week business? I thought you'd never ask. It's the 7th day that allows you, if you so desire, to eat peach crepes and banana bread until you go into a coma. Rule number 5. Take 1 day off per week. I recommend Saturdays as your dieter's gone wild, DGW day. I am allowed to eat whatever I want on Saturdays, and I go out of my way to eat ice cream, Snickers, Take 5, and all of my other vices in excess. If I drank beer, I'd have a few pints of Paulaner Hefeweizen. I make myself a little sick each Saturday and don't want to look at any junk for the rest of the week. Paradoxically, dramatically spiking caloric intake in this way once per week increases fat loss by ensuring that your metabolic rate, thyroid function and conversion of T4 to T3, etc., doesn't downshift from extended caloric restriction. That's right. Eating pure crap can help you lose fat. Welcome to utopia. There are no limits or boundaries during this day of gluttonous enjoyment. There is absolutely no calorie counting on this diet, on this day or any other. Start the diet at least 5 days before your designated cheat day. If you choose Saturday, for example, I would suggest starting your diet on a Monday. When you feel mired in details or confused by the latest and greatest contradictory advice, all you need to remember is, rule number 1, avoid white carbohydrates or anything that can be white. Rule number 2, eat the same few meals over and over again. Rule number 3, Don't drink calories. Rule number 4, don't eat fruit. Rule number 5, take one day off per week and go nuts. The slow carb diet 2. The finer points and common questions. How can I possibly follow this diet? It's too strict. Most people vastly overestimate the variety of their meals. Assuming you're not traveling, what have you had to eat for breakfast for the last week? Lunch? Chances are good that especially for breakfast, you've repeated 1 to 3 meals. Rotating 5 or 6 meals for a few weeks is not hard at all, even though you might imagine otherwise. Feeling awesome and looking better each successive week easily justifies having good but familiar food from Sunday to Friday. Saturday is a no-holds-barred. Should I take any supplements? I suggest potassium, magnesium, and calcium. This diet will cause you to lose excess water, and these electrolytes can go along with it. Potassium can be consumed during meals by using a potassium-enriched salt, like light salt, or, my preference, eating extra guacamole with Mexican meals. Avocados, the main ingredient in guacamole, contain 60% more potassium than bananas. Avocados also contain 75% insoluble fiber, which will help keep you regular. If you prefer pills, 99 milligram tablets with meals will do the trick. Magnesium and calcium are easiest to consume in pill form, and 500 milligrams of magnesium taken prior to bed will also improve sleep. If you prefer to get all electrolytes through whole foods, here are good slow-carb options, in descending order of concentration. Notice that spinach is the only item on all three lists. Potassium, 4,700 milligrams per day recommended for an average, healthy 25-year-old male. 1. Lima beans, at the top of the list. 2. Chard. 3. Halibut. 4. Spinach. 5. Pinto beans. 6. Lentils. 7. Salmon. 8. Black beans. 9. Sardines. 10. Mushrooms. Calcium. 1,000 milligrams per day recommended for an average healthy 25-year-old male. 1. Salmon with bones at the top of the list. 2. Sardines with bones. 3. Mackerel, canned. 4. Tofu. 5. Collards. 6. Spinach. 7. Black-eyed peas. 8. Turnip greens. 9. Tempeh. 10. Agar. Magnesium, 400 milligrams per day recommended for an average healthy 25-year-old male. 1. Pumpkin seeds at the top of the list. 2. Watermelon seeds. 3. Peanuts. 4. Halibut, cooked. 5. Almonds. 6. Spinach. 7. Soybeans. 8. Cashews. 9. Pine nuts. 10. Brazil nuts. No dairy? Really? Doesn't milk have a low glycemic index? It's true that milk has a low glycemic index, GI, and a low glycemic load, GL. For the latter, whole milk clocks in at an attractive 27. Unfortunately, milk products paradoxically have a high insulinemic response on the insulinemic index, II or ININ, scale. Researchers from Lund University in Sweden have examined this surprising finding. Despite low glycemic indexes of 15 to 30, all of the milk products produced high insulinemic indexes of 90 to 98. Which were not significantly different from the insulinemic index of the reference bread, generally white bread. Conclusions? Milk products appear insulinotropic as judged from 3-fold to 6-fold higher insulinemic indexes than expected from the corresponding glycemic indexes. Removing even a little dairy can dramatically accelerate fat loss. Need something to flavor your coffee? If you must, use cream, not milk. But no more than 2 tablespoons. I opt for a few dashes of cinnamon and the occasional drops of vanilla extract. No fruit? Don't I need a balanced diet? No. To begin with, there is no consensus on what a balanced diet is. My researchers and I tried to find an official definition from the U.S. Department of Agriculture or other federal agencies, and we could not. I have not seen any evidence to suggest that fruits are necessary more than once a week on cheat day. God, I effing hate beans. Can I substitute something else? Perhaps you just hate farting and not beans. First, let's fix that bean issue. Then I'll talk about how and when you can omit them. Lentils seldom cause the gas problem and are my default in the legume category. For beans, purchasing organic will often fix the rumbling pants effect. And if that doesn't work, soaking the beans in water for a few minutes will help break down the offending cause. Oligosaccharides. This is one of many reasons I eat canned beans and lentils, disposing of the murky juice in the can and rinsing, instead of purchasing either dry. If all else fails, add some Beano, Beanzyme for you vegans, or Epizode, available at Mexican grocery stores or online, to the beans, and you're set. Is it not gas, but the blandness that's the problem? That's even easier to fix. Add a little balsamic vinegar and garlic powder. I personally love hot sauce. www.cholula.com is my current favorite. Try red beans instead of black or pinto. If you absolutely must, sprinkle on a small amount, emphasis on small, of Parmesan cheese. Do you really have to eat beans every meal? No, which leads up to the rules of omission. I do not eat beans with every meal because I eat out almost every lunch and dinner. If I'm cooking, lentils and black beans are my defaults. Outside, I'll order extra protein and vegetables for the entree and supplement with one or two slow-carb appetizers, such as unbreaded calamari and a salad with olive oil and vinegar. If you omit legumes in a meal, you must absolutely make a concerted effort to eat larger portions than your former high-carb self. Remember that you're getting fewer calories per cubic inch. Eat more than you're accustomed to. Holy Festivus, I gained 8 pounds after my cheat day. Did I undo all of my progress? No, not at all. It's common for even a 120-pound female to gain up to 8 pounds of water weight after 24 hours of increased carbohydrate intake. Larger males can gain 10 to 20 pounds. Expect massive weight fluctuations after cheat day. Relax. It's just water and will disappear over the next 48 hours. Weigh yourself before eating on your cheat day and ignore the short-term fluctuations, which do not reflect fat loss or gain. Remember to take circumference measurements on your weigh-in days, as it is typical to gain some lean muscle while on this diet. The mitochondria in muscle increase your ability to oxidize fat, so we want to encourage this. But the muscle gain can keep you at the same weight for 1 to 2 weeks. Pounds can lie, but measurements don't. Enjoy your cheat day guilt-free. Can I use spices, salt, or light sauces? What can I use for cooking? Spices and herbs, but not cream-based sauces, are your friends. Take a trip to Whole Foods with $50 and get educated. That $50 spree will last you at least a few months. Montreal steak rub, thick salsa without sugar added, garlic salt, white truffle sea salt. Combine this with tarragon on eggs. Thai chili paste. This is a list of all-star flavor. For salad dressing, a few drops of non-sugar sweetener like stevia mixed with vinegar and mustard will give you a dressing to satisfy any sweet tooth. My preference, and my go-to restaurant salad dressing, is simply balsamic vinegar and olive oil. Butter is fine as long as the only ingredients are butter and salt. For cooking, you can use olive oil for low heat and either grapeseed oil or macadamia oil for high-temperature cooking. Can I drink alcohol? What types of wine are best? On cheat days, all is fair. Have a keg by yourself if the spirit moves you. On diet days, stick to dry wines, dry being defined as less than 1.4% residual sugar. The driest red varietals are Pinot Noir, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Merlot, whereas the driest whites are generally Sauvignon Blanc and Albarino. This certainly doesn't stop me from enjoying my favorite big reds, Malbec from Argentina and Zinfandel from California. I have found better fat loss results with red wine compared to white. Though there are exceptions, it's best to avoid Riesling, white Zinfandel, and champagne. What should I eat for snacks? There should be no need or real physical urge to eat a lot of snacks. If you are hungry, you're not eating enough protein and legumes at each meal. This is an uber-common novice screw-up. I've been there too. Eat more. If you're eating enough and still feel the urge to snack, it's a psychological addiction. One that most often goes hand-in-hand with procrastination. Some of us go to the bathroom, others go to the water cooler, and others eat. I've done all three, so I know the drill. If all else fails and you must have a snack, go for carrots. But a bag of carrots will hit you like a donkey kick in the stomach, so don't binge. If I snack, I'll most often make a small snack, 200 to 300 calories, out of restaurant leftovers like Thai chicken basil with no rice. If you're really starving, just eat another slow-carb meal. It won't do any harm. If you get headaches or have other symptoms of low blood sugar, 90% of the time it will be because you are not eating enough. First-time slow-carbers are accustomed to eating small portions of calorically dense carbohydrates. Think bagels or pasta. And they duplicate the portion sizes with a calorically lighter slow-carb foods, resulting in insufficient calories. Expect that you can eat 2 to 3 times as much volume, and assume that you should. Likewise, if you have trouble sleeping due to hunger, you're not eating enough. In these cases, consume a bit of protein prior to bed, which can be as simple as 1 to 2 tablespoons of almond butter, ideal, or peanut butter with no additives. The only ingredients should be peanuts and perhaps salt. Note, especially the ladies, for whom peanut butter seems to be like crack, the tablespoon scoop should be no more than a small mound, not half a jar balanced on a spoon. Do I really have to binge once a week? It is important to spike caloric intake once per week. This causes a host of hormonal changes that improve fat loss, from increasing CAMP and GMP to improving conversion of the T4 thyroid hormone to the more active T3. Everyone binges eventually on a diet, and it's better to schedule it ahead of time to limit the duration and damage. The psychological benefits outweigh even the hormonal and metabolic benefits. I eat like this all the time and have for 7 years. Few ways of eating, WOE, are this sustainable and beneficial. Can you get away with one cheat meal per week? Most men can. Some women can't. Menstruation can stop if leptin levels get too low. This happened to one reader for 7 months until she returned to refeeding, as she called it, binge day, though she only did it once every 2 weeks. Forced overfeeding can temporarily increase circulating leptin 40%. I still suggest once per week as a default. Bumping up food intake for 12 to 24 hours, not necessarily to the point of sickness, is an important reset. If you gain too much or plateau and get nervous, eat a good high-protein meal for breakfast on your off day, and then binge from lunch to dinner, which is what I now do most of the time. I don't always splurge to the point of sickness. In a response to one slow-carber, I explained, "Yes, you can eat anything you want, in any quantity, on Saturdays. I tend to go nuts every 1 of 4 weeks and eat so much I get nearly sick, which makes me moderate the other three. I love Snickers, Tim Tams, Bear Claws, and all pastries, and ice cream. Enjoy." One more tip. Whenever possible, eat out for your cheat meals. No matter what, throw out all bad food before the next morning. If there is bad food in your house, you will eventually eat it before your off day, also called reverse Lent by some followers. What about breakfast? My most frequent breakfast consists of eggs, lentils, and spinach. I prefer lentils straight out of the can to black beans. Breakfast is the hardest meal for most to modify, as we're a country of toast and cereal-eating junkies. Moving to slow carbs and protein requires a more lunch-like meal for breakfast. This is easier when you realize that breakfast can be a smaller meal when followed by a lunch 3 to 5 hours later. Try it for 5 days and you'll see the difference. Not only will the increased protein intake decrease water retention, resting metabolism increases about 20% if your breakfast calories are at least 30% protein. If you want a more typical breakfast, try eggs with turkey bacon, or organic normal bacon, and sliced tomato. Delicious. Cottage cheese, my mother's preference, is also a fine addition. Do I have to limit veggies to those listed? There's no need to limit veggies to those I listed, but I've found that the more variety you attempt, the more likely you are to quit, as everything from shopping to cleanup becomes more complicated. As I've said before, this diet is not designed to be fun, even though most people end up enjoying it. It's designed to be effective. The vegetables I've listed are those I've found to be the most tolerable when eating them again and again. Feel free to substitute whatever you want, but don't forget to include legumes for calories. One veggie that often gets unnecessarily tossed due to rule number one, no white foods, is cauliflower. Eat all the cauliflower you like. It's great for making faux mashed potatoes. Otherwise, stick to the no white rule. Are canned foods all right? Canned foods are absolutely fine. No problem. Almost all of my vegetables are either frozen, 80%, or canned, 20%. I'm a huge fan of canned tuna in water mixed with lentils and chopped onions. Can I eat whole grains or steel-cut oats? No. Can I do this if I'm a lacto-ovo vegetarian? Lacto-ovo is fine. Meat isn't necessary, but it does make the job easier. Eggs and beans are sufficient to lose weight, and I would avoid most milk products regardless. Cottage cheese is an exception. It doesn't interrupt things, and the high casein content appears to facilitate fat loss. Can I eat salsa? Salsa is outstanding, especially chunky, medium, spicy salsa with corn, beans, etc. I can't stand egg whites by themselves, as they're too boring even for me. This is why I almost always eat whole eggs, but if you add a few spoonfuls of salsa on top of either option, it's a delicious little meal. Just don't put the salsa and lentils in the same bowl. The mixture will make you gag like a cat coughing up a hairball. Fried foods? Stir fry is ideal for this diet, as are most cuisines, like Thai, that depend on it. Deep frying should be avoided because of the breading and poor nutrient density for the calories. Refried beans work just fine, and more than 30 slow carbers have lost up to 1 pound per day using them as a staple. Reader David C. lost 20 pounds in 30 days using almost exclusively canned refried beans. In his last update, he'd lost 42 pounds, and his wife had lost 36 pounds. Refried beans do, however, contain a boatload of sodium, approximately 45% of the daily allowance per cup. If you don't have hypertension, this probably won't kill you, but do your best to include other beans or mix them together on occasion. This will result in less water retention and looking better. Bloated ain't pretty, no matter how low your body fat. I love refried beans, but try to diversify once you have the hang of the diet. What if I'm traveling and eating in airports? If you're airport hopping and cannot find a Mexican restaurant or grill, grab a bag of raw almonds or walnuts at a kiosk and commit to consuming no starch for the remainder of your travel time. There are more than enough calories in that single bag to give you 2 to 3 small meals and get you through a full 12 hours. Most airports also have chicken salads, omit dressings beside olive oil and vinegar, that you can combine with the nuts. If it comes down to it, choose mild hunger instead of deviation. If you always eat on the clock, perhaps it's been a few years since you felt real hunger. Having followed this diet in 30-plus countries, I can state, without exception, that travel is not a legitimate excuse for breaking the rules. Isn't higher protein hard on the kidneys? What if I have gout? First, I am not a doctor, nor do I play one on the internet. If you have medical conditions of any type, consult a physician. Now, on to my interpretation of the data. If you don't have a serious pre-existing medical condition, the amount of protein I prescribe should not hurt you. There is no compelling evidence to support the protein hurts your kidneys claim. This is what Michael Eads, MD, calls a vampire myth, because it just refuses to die despite a lack of evidence. Gout? Gout is usually blamed on purines and therefore protein, so those diagnosed with it, like my mother, will be put on low-protein, low-legume diets. I ascribe to Gary Taubes' interpretation of the scientific literature, which indicates that fructose, and therefore sucrose, table sugar, and other factors are more likely to be causal agents of gout. Phosphoric acid in carbonated drinks is also one to avoid. My mother's uric acid levels normalized on the slow-carb diet, despite much higher protein intake. She continued to take low-dose allopurinol during the diet, and the food was the only variable that changed. This said, no matter what you do with your diet or self-experimentation, do not stop or modify medication without consulting a medical professional. I'm hitting a plateau. What should I do? The first three mistakes I'm about to discuss, eating too late, not eating enough protein, drinking too little water, are the most common causes. Nevertheless, the total percentage of body fat loss per month naturally decreases over time. The number of mitochondria in your muscle tissue largely determines your rate of sustained fat loss. Targeted exercise, even just 20 minutes per week, will often double fat loss that's plateaued, and should do so for at least 2 to 4 months. Common mistakes and misunderstandings. The first three mistakes in this section cover 90% plus of stalling problems, but the rest are well worth listening to. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and, in this case, a few minutes of education is worth many pounds of extra fat loss. Mistake number one, not eating within 1 hour of waking, preferably within 30 minutes. Skip breakfast, forget to eat within 1 hour of waking, and you will fail. Mistake number two, not eating enough protein. Get at least 20 grams of protein per meal. This is absolutely most critical at breakfast. Eating at least 40% of your breakfast calories as protein will decrease carb impulses and promote a negative fat balance. Even 20% protein, more than most people consume, doesn't cut it. First choice, down 2 to 3 whole eggs at breakfast. Second choice, if that's impossible to stomach, add other protein-rich whole foods, such as turkey bacon, organic sausages, or cottage cheese. Third choice, have a 30-gram protein shake with ice and water, as my father did. The first few days, you'll feel like you're force-feeding yourself, and then it will all change, and you'll feel incredible. Get at least 20 grams of protein per meal, no matter what. Related problem, not eating enough food. Do not try to restrict portions or calories. Eat until you are full, and eat as much as you like of the approved foods. If you don't, you will either downshift your metabolism or cheat between meals with banned food snacks. Mistake number three, not drinking enough water. To ensure optimal liver function for fat loss, increased hydration is a requirement. Insufficient water intake, I just don't like drinking much water, seems to be particularly common among women. My mother plateaued in fat loss, and looking at her water intake, I insisted she add a few more glasses. She immediately started losing fat again and lost 3 pounds in the subsequent week. Make a special effort to drink more water on your cheat day, as the carbohydrate overload will pull water to your digestive tract and muscle glycogen from elsewhere. If you don't get enough water, headaches will be the result. Mistake number four, believing that you'll cook, especially if you're a bachelor. In a sentence, if you don't normally cook, get canned and frozen food for the first few weeks. Don't buy a bunch of food that requires cooking skills if you don't have them. Don't buy foods that'll spoil if you've never prepared a proper meal. Unfounded optimism will just result in rotten food and frustration. Keep it simple. If you're preparing food for yourself, use frozen and canned stuff for at least the first 2 weeks. Change one habit at a time. Food selection first, food preparation second. Mistake number five, mistiming weighings with the menstrual cycle. Not a problem for bachelors. Women tend to retain much more water just before their periods or during the week preceding menstruation, if on birth control. Be sure to take this into account when you start your diet and take measurements. Ignore scale readings in the 10 days before menstruation. They're not at all a reflection of what's happening. If you are following the diet to the letter, you will lose fat. Treat your first weighing following your period, as soon as 1 day following is fine, as your after measurement. Don't let short-term water fluctuation discourage you. Be aware of your menstrual timing so you don't mistakenly conclude the diet isn't working. Mistake number 6. Overeating domino foods. Nuts, chickpeas, garbanzo beans, hummus, peanuts, macadamias. There are certain foods that, while technically fine to eat on the diet, are prone to portion abuse. I call these domino foods, as eating one portion often creates a domino effect of over-snacking. My fat loss has plateaued 3 times due to almonds, which are easy to consume by the handful and simple to excuse as nutritious. Unfortunately, they also contain 824 calories per cup, 146 calories more than a Whopper from Burger King, 678 kilocalories. A few almonds is just fine, 5 to 10. But no one eats just a few almonds. Don't eat anything that requires portion control. Get Domino Foods out of the house and out of reach. Mistake number 7. Overconsuming artificial or all-natural sweeteners. Even with no calories, most artificial and natural sugar substitutes provoke increased insulin release. Though aspartame, NutraSweet, shows surprisingly little effect on insulin. Not that this is a free license to overconsume NutraSweet. It's often paired with the Cecil-famed K, which has a host of negative health effects. Both low-calorie and no-calorie sweeteners have been associated with weight gain. I've seen just about all of them stall fat loss. Skip the sweeteners whenever possible. If it's really sweet, it probably spikes insulin or screws up your metabolism. Experiment with spices and extracts, like cinnamon and vanilla instead. Mistake number 8. Hitting the gym too often. There is no need to spend 12 hours in the gym. 1 hour a week is almost always more than enough to reach your recomposition goals. Doing too much will not only not help, it will reverse your progress. Remember the MED. The Lost Art of Binging. Sitting down for Thanksgiving dinner or butter cookies at Christmas? Sounds like a binge. That, in and of itself, doesn't need to mean horrible guilt and extra fat rolls afterwards. If you plan for overdoing it and understand a little science, it's possible to minimize the damage. I eat whatever I want every Saturday, and I follow specific steps to minimize fat gain during this overfeeding. In basic terms, our goal is simple: to have as much of the crap ingested either go into muscle tissue or out of the body unabsorbed. I do this by focusing on 3 principles. Principle number 1. Minimize the release of insulin, a storage hormone. Insulin release is minimized by blunting sharp jumps in blood sugar. Ensure that your first meal of the day is not a binge meal. Make it high in protein, at least 30 grams, and in soluble fiber. Legumes will handle this. The protein will decrease your appetite for the remainder of the binge and prevent total self-destruction. The fiber will be important later to prevent diarrhea. In total, this can be a smallish meal of 300 to 500 calories. Consume a small quantity of fructose, fruit sugar, in grapefruit juice before the second meal, which is the first crap meal. Even small fructose dosing has an impressive near flatlining effect on blood glucose. I could consume this at the first meal, but I prefer to combine the naringin and grapefruit juice with coffee as it extends the effects of caffeine. Use supplements that increase insulin sensitivity. AGG, part of PAGG, and PAGG, which I'll explain soon. I usually dose only twice. If I'm going whole hog, I'll have another PAGG dose upon waking. This reduces the amount of insulin the pancreas releases in spite of mild or severe glucose surges. Think of it as insurance. Consume citric juices, whether lime juice squeezed into water, lemon juice on food, or a beverage like citrus kombucha. Principle number 2. Increase the speed of gastric emptying, or how quickly food exits the stomach. Binging is a rare circumstance where I want the food, or some of it, to pass through my gastrointestinal tract so quickly that its constituent parts aren't absorbed well. I accomplish this primarily through caffeine and yerba mate tea, which includes the additional stimulants theobromine found in dark chocolate, and theophylline, found in green tea. I consume 100 to 200 milligrams of caffeine, or 16 ounces of cooled yerba mate, at the most crap-laden meals. My favorite green supplements, Athletic Greens, doesn't contain caffeine, but will also help. Does this really work? Taking the goodies from taste buds to toilet without much storage in between? More than a few people have told me it's pure science fiction. Too much information, TMI, warning. I disagree, and for good reason. Rather than debate meta-studies, I simply weighed my poo. Identical volumes of food on and off the protocol. On protocol equals much more poo mass, same consistency, hence the importance of fiber, equals less absorption, equals fewer chocolate croissants to take up permanent residence on my abs. Simple but effective? Perhaps. Good to leave out of first date conversation? Definitely. But I digress. On to one of the cooler aspects of this whole craziness. GLUT4. Principle number 3. Engage in brief muscular contraction throughout the binge. For muscular contractions, my default options are air squats, wall presses, tricep extensions against a wall, and chest pulls with an elastic band, as all three are portable and can be done without causing muscle trauma that screws up training. The latter two can be performed by anyone, even those who have difficulty walking. But why the hell would you want to do 60 to 90 seconds of funny exercises a few minutes before you eat, and, ideally, again, about 90 minutes afterward? Short answer, because it brings glucose transporter type 4, GLUT4, to the surface of muscle cells, opening more gates for the calories to flow into. The more muscular gates we have open before insulin triggers the same GLUT4 on the surface of fat cells, the more we can put in our muscle versus our fat. Long answer, GLUT4 has been studied most intensely for the last 15 years or so, as it became clear around 1995 that exercise and insulin appear to activate, translocate, GLUT4 through different but overlapping signaling pathways. This was exciting to me, as it meant it might be possible to use exercise to beat meal-induced insulin release to the punch, to preemptively flip the switch on the biological train tracks so that food, glucose, is preferentially siphoned to muscle tissue. But how much contraction is enough? It turns out, at least with animals, that much less muscular contraction is needed than was once thought. In one fascinating Japanese study with rats, high-intensity intermittent exercise, HIT, 20-second sprints times 14 sets with 10 seconds of rest between sets, was compared to low-intensity prolonged exercise, LIT, 6 hours of extended exercise, over 8 days. The surprising result? Compared to a control, GLUT4 content in the muscle was increased 83% with 280 seconds of HIT, versus 91% with 6 hours of LIT. Now, of course, animal models don't always have a direct transfer to humans. But I wondered, what if 280 seconds was all it took? This thought produced even more questions. Do we have to get the 280 seconds all at once, or can they be spread out? Is 280 seconds really the magic number, or could even fewer seconds trigger the same effect? Is it even plausible that 60 to 90 seconds of moderate contractions could have a meaningful impact? To attempt to answer these questions, I contacted researcher after researcher on three continents, including GLUT4 specialists at the Muscle Biology Laboratory at the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor. The short answer was, it did appear plausible. The most important research insight came from Dr. Gregory D. Carty and Katsuhiko Funai. The insulin-independent effects of exercise begins to reverse minutes after exercise cessation, with most or all of the increase lost within 1 to 4 hours. A much more persistent effect is improved insulin sensitivity that is often found approximately 2 to 4 hours and as long as 1 to 2 days after acute exercise. I started with 60 to 120 seconds total of air squats and wall tricep extensions immediately prior to eating main courses. For additional effect, I later tested doing another 60 to 90 seconds approximately 1.5 hours after finishing the main courses, when I expected blood glucose to be highest based on experiments with glucometers. Exercises are best done in a restroom stall and not at the table. If you can't leave the table, get good at isometric, without moving, contraction of your legs. Try to look casual instead of constipated. It takes some practice. In all cases, if you do 60 to 90 seconds of contraction after each meal, and a bit before ideally, you might live to see your abs. Don't forget the air squats. The Four Horsemen of Fat Loss, PAGG. Summer 2007, Northern California. The smoke wisped into the air amid the sounds of summer eating. Laughter, beer bottles clinking, and the undeniable sizzle of tri-tip steak on three enormous outdoor grills. All was well in Willow Glen, San Jose, where my parents were visiting me from out of town. I was at home, but they had ventured out to explore downtown Lincoln Avenue on a beautiful afternoon, which led them to La Via Italian Restaurant. My father was standing on the corner admiring the grill work when a thin homeless man sauntered up to his side. After a minute or two of silence and staring at meat and tongs, the homeless man made this opening. "You know how I lost all my weight? More than 100 pounds?" My dad was 5'6" and almost 250 pounds at the time. Silence followed for several seconds, and my father, amused by the approach and more than a bit curious, finally relented. "How?" "Garlic. Clove after clove. It's that simple." The homeless man didn't want anything and never asked for anything. He was earnest. After sharing his advice, he just walked away. As unusual as this encounter was, I had, in fact, been looking at garlic for some time. This was just the final anecdotal push I needed to begin experimenting at much, much higher doses. The homeless man's contribution to my latest cocktail made it all come together. The feedback from one guinea pig, a semi-professional athlete with approximately 9% body fat at 200 pounds, was representative. "I've lost 6 pounds of fat in the last week. This is unfreaking believable." Allicin, one component of garlic, appeared to be the missing fourth ingredient in a supplement stack I'd been refining for 2 years. PAGG. Before, ECA. From 1995 to 2000, I experimented with a fat loss cocktail that comprised ephedrine hydrochloride, caffeine, and aspirin, the famed and research-proven ECA stack. This was the mixture I used 3 times per day when on the cyclical ketogenic diet to produce veins on my abdomen for the first time in my life, all in less than 8 weeks. Ephedrine hydrochloride, 20 milligrams, caffeine, 200 milligrams, aspirin, 85 milligrams. The biochemistry was spot on, and dozens of studies supported the effects. If E equals 1, C equals 1, and A equals 1, the three combined have a synergistic effect of 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 6 minus 10. Sadly, the ECA stack is not a free ride. The effects are beautiful and predictable, but there are prices to be paid. Side effects. Tolerance to the upper-like effects develops quickly, and cessation can cause severe headaches. The withdrawal pains lead to a domino effect of stimulant use. Either people never stop taking ECA, or they substitute in equally strong drugs to avoid chronic fatigue. I suspect there is an entire generation of strength and endurance athletes with ECA-induced adrenal fatigue who now depend on stimulants for normal everyday function. Some, I know, opt for 6 to 10 double espressos per 24 hours. Used in high doses or in high humidity, high heat conditions, ephedrine and ephedra have both been associated with heart attack and death. I suffered so many sinus infections post-ECA that I visited a Stanford-trained specialist who, after reviewing a cranial MRI, asked without a second of hesitation, "Do you drink much caffeine or take other stimulants?" Almost all of my sinal cavities were completely blocked with compressed, dried matter. She was amazed that I was able to get out of bed in the morning. From that point onward, I removed stimulants for brief but increasing periods, as painful as it was, until I had reestablished basic adrenal function. It was clear that another fat loss approach was needed, something more sustainable. I wanted to find a non-stimulant stack that used different pathways altogether. After, PAGG. The end result was PAGG. Polycosinol, 20 to 25 milligrams, alpha-lipoic acid, 100 to 300 milligrams. I take 300 milligrams with each meal, but some people experience acid reflux symptoms with more than 100 milligrams. Green tea flavanols, decaffeinated with at least 325 milligrams EGCG, 325 milligrams. Garlic extract, 200 milligrams. Daily PAGG intake is timed before meals and bed, which produces a schedule like this. Prior to breakfast, AGG. Prior to lunch, AGG. Prior to dinner, AGG. Prior to bed, PAGG. AGG is simply PAGG minus polycosinol. This dosing schedule is followed 6 days a week. Take 1 day off each week and 1 week off every 2 months. Let's look at our new cast of characters. Polycosinol. Polycosinol, an extract of plant waxes, often sugarcane, is the most controversial element in the PAGG stack. I originally experimented with polycosinol at low and high doses to increase HDL cholesterol and decrease LDL cholesterol. Used in combination with time-release niacin, one orange before bed, and chromium polynicotinate, not picolinate, during the 4-week Geek to Freak project detailed in later chapters. I lowered my total cholesterol from 222 to 147 while almost doubling HDL. There was a pleasant side effect, an unintended but significant reduction in body fat. I isolated the polycosinol over several weeks of further testing. The research studies are far from conclusive regarding polycosinol's effects on cholesterol. Most show no effect whatsoever. This could be due to not dosing polycosinol before peak cholesterol production between midnight and 4 a.m. Regardless, the addition of polycosinol, 10 to 25 milligrams before bed, to the PAGG, then AGG stack, produces, in my experience and those of my guinea pigs, far superior effects for fat loss versus AGG alone. This was tested with 3 brands and 3 dosages, 10, 23, and 40 milligrams per day. I found 23 milligrams per day to be optimal for fat loss, with little additional benefit from higher doses. Alpha-lipoic acid, ALA. Alpha-lipoic acid, ALA, is a potent antioxidant and free radical scavenger that has been proven to regenerate vitamin C and vitamin A, restore levels of intracellular glutathione, an important antioxidant that declines with age, and increase excretion of toxic heavy metals such as mercury. It was first synthesized and tested in the 1970s for the treatment of chronic liver diseases. The intravenous interventions reversed disease in 75 out of 79 subjects. Given its impressive effects, the most remarkable feature of ALA is its apparent lack of toxicity in humans. Its NOAEL, no observable adverse effect level, is 60 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, which would make up to 4,091 milligrams per day safe for a 150-pound person. Our dosing will be 300 to 900 milligrams total per day. Though lipoic acid naturally occurs in some organ meats and vegetables, including spinach and broccoli, the amounts are trace. I didn't want to consume 10 tons of liver for 30 milligrams of lipoic acid, so I began using synthetic alpha-lipoic acid in 1995. In one sentence, here's why alpha-lipoic acid is kick-ass for our purposes. ALA helps you store the carbohydrates you eat in muscle or in your liver as opposed to in fat. Green tea flavanols, EGCG. Epigallocatechin gallate, EGCG, is a catechin and flavanol found in green teas. It has been researched for a wide range of applications, including decreasing the risk of UV-induced skin damage, inhibiting cancer growth, and reducing mitochondrial oxidative stress. Anti-aging. I tested green tea and EGCG once again for the unreported off-label benefits, specifically two related to body recomposition. Much like ALA, EGCG increases GLUT4 recruitment to the surface of skeletal muscle cells. Of equal interest, it inhibits GLUT4 recruitment in fat cells. In other words, it inhibits the storage of excess carbohydrates as body fat and preferentially diverts them to muscle cells. EGCG appears to increase programmed cell death, apoptosis, in mature fat cells. This means that these hard-to-kill bastards commit suicide. The ease with which people regain fat is due to a certain fat memory. The size of fat cells decreases, but not the number, which makes ECGC a fascinating candidate for preventing the horrible rebounding most dieters experience. Human studies have shown some potential fat loss with as little as a single dose of 150 milligrams of EGCG, but we will target 325 milligrams 3 to 4 times per day, as the fat loss results seem to hockey stick, go from a mild incline to a sharp rise, between 900 and 1100 milligrams per day for the 150 to 200 pound subjects I've worked with. I suggest decaffeinated green tea extract pills as the source, unless you want to be stuck to the ceiling and feel ill. Using tea leaves and steeping cup after cup is too imprecise and too caffeinated. If you are undergoing cancer treatment, please consult your doctor before using EGCG, as it can increase the effects of some drugs, the estrogen antagonist tamoxifen, for example, while decreasing the effects of others, such as the drug Velcade, to which it binds. If you are undergoing treatment for multiple myeloma or mantle cell lymphoma, likewise avoid EGCG. Garlic extract, allicin potential, S-allyl, cysteine. Garlic extract and its constituent parts have been used for applications ranging from cholesterol management to inhibiting lethal MRSA staph infections. Strangely, test subjects and I had the best fat loss results with extracts designed to deliver relatively high doses of allicin. Allicin, if delivered in stable form, appears to have the ability to inhibit fat regain. The reason our results were strange relates to the stable form bit. Most research indicates that allicin should have almost zero bioavailability more than 6 days after extraction from garlic cloves, particularly after exposure to stomach acid. Our confounding results could be due to a combination of other organic components, most notably one precursor to allicin, S-allyl-cysteine, allin. S-allyl-cysteine exhibits outstanding oral bioavailability, near 100% in large mammals. Until further research concludes otherwise, I suggest using an aged garlic extract, AGE, with high allicin potential that includes all constituent parts, including S-allyl-cysteine. I've tried consuming it fresh, chomping on cloves, and it isn't kind to your digestive tract. If you are going the whole food route, use it in your cooking to prevent stomach self-destruction. For precision and convenience, I use supplements to reach my target baseline in dosing, and I use extra garlic in food for delectable, but not necessary, insurance above that baseline. Warnings. Ensure adequate consumption of B-complex vitamins while using PAGG and consult your doctor before use if you have a medical condition. For example, hypertension, hypoglycemia, diabetes, or are taking any medications. In particular, blood-thinning medications, for example, warfarin, aspirin, etc., thyroid medications, or anti-anxiety drugs like clozapine. If you are pregnant or breastfeeding, do not use PAGG. Blood-thinning compounds ain't for babies. Ice Age. Mastering temperature to manipulate weight. Michael Phelps eats 12,000 calories a day. That was all Ray Cronise heard from across the room. He jerked his eyes up from the spreadsheet and reached for the TiVo to pause the television. 12,000 calories. Ray Chronis had been a high-ranking material scientist at NASA for almost 15 years, and his specialties included biophysics and analytical chemistry. He'd been in mission operations and seen, hell, help produce research the public wouldn't see for decades. But spending half his life in a lab behind a computer had taken its toll. The creeping 2 to 4 pounds per year had added up and left him